Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show where we don't take calls. We don't take calls? No, we don't take calls and we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, and it's so good to have you back on a special Saturday night edition of the Weekly Worldview, doing the show on Saturday, trying to be a little bit more responsible with my audience, because I'm going on the road to, where am I going? Casper, Wyoming, going out in the Wild West. And do some cow tipping or something like that. So I'll be on the road by Sunday night. So I'm glad to have you here on Saturday night for this special edition. Joined in studio today by my extremely attractive audio engineer and ready to dive into the news of the day. It's kind of weird doing it on Saturday, but I suppose we should just jump right in. Probably the number one story active in the news right now is the shooting out at Los Angeles report, allegedly carried out, according to this report from CNN, by 23-year-old Paul Anthony Ciancia. Yeah, Paul Anthony Ciancia. Sounds like just your average white guy from New Jersey or from America somewhere. We'll learn more about him. Anyway, I think this confirms my axiom that it's actually Americans raised in our secular humanist culture who represent the most immediate threat to me and you and our fellow Americans. Let's see here. He was the question CNN asks here is, why did he do it? Why? Materials found on the suspect, according to CNN, included a rant that appeared to refer to the New World Order. And so joining us in studio now for his first appearance for a guest commentary on the LAX shooting, in studio now is Mr. Alex Jones. Welcome to the studio, Mr. Jones.
Shut up and get out of my way, McBurney. Let a real radio host sit down here and explain to you what's happening. Let me explain it. It's a false flag operation. It's a false flag. And they're putting it right in our face now. They don't even try their false flag operations. Look at the guy's name. Did you catch his name? Ciancia? Spell it out. Do I have to spell it out for you people? CIA and CIA. It's right there in his name. It's a false flag operation.
Okay, Mr. Jones, a false flag. What do you think the false flag operation is designed to do?
It's a classic false flag designed to draw away your attention from the fact that they're setting up internment camps and setting you up for World War III.
I understand, Mr. Jones. I hadn't heard that take before, but I hadn't read the young man's name. Indeed, it's CIA. CIA.
That's right, it's the CIA undercover of the CIA. Do I have to spell it out for you people?
Well, we appreciate your commentary, Mr. Jones. Can I ask you about a couple other things that have been in the news over... I've always been interested to have you in studio and hear some of your in-depth analysis. What about the shooting out at Sandy Hook?
False flag operation! It's a false flag mind control!
Okay, what about the Aurora Theater shoot?
False flag! False flag! Fluoride! Hollow points!
What about the terrorist attack on 9/11?
That was a false flag! A false flag orchestrated by Dick Cheney to fuel his insatiable lust for endless war!
And, let's see, are there any others that we missed? What about Y2K?
Another false flag! NSA! That's a false flag! Fluoride! Contrails! Hollow points!
Would you like a glass of water or something, Mr. Jones?
I don't need a glass of water unless someone else is going to taste it first.
Okay, somebody call an ambulance for Mr. Jones. He's going to leave the studio now, but we certainly do appreciate the in-depth commentary from radio personality Alex Jones. All right. Thank you very much. Yes, an ambulance. Thank you. Okay. All right, now we'll move on into the news from the Washington Times. We've all heard that the attack on Benghazi could not be thwarted because there simply wasn't time to send special forces out to the area to protect the Americans who were under assault. The Washington Times reported this week that two of the U.S. military's elite special operations commandos have been awarded medals for bravery for a mission in Benghazi, a mission that the Washington Times asserts further undercuts the Obama administration's original story about the Benghazi attack. Administration officials for months have claimed that no special operations forces were dispatched outside. They say that time and distance, oh, you notice that? Administration officials have claimed yada, yada, yada. The news media never blames Barry for anything personally. He's not responsible, nor does he know anything. Just a nebulous group of administration officials have made and asserted claims over the past several months. Amongst them, that the distance prevented any commandos outside of Libya from reaching the compound that was under attack. But the Washington Times reports sources directly familiar with the attack tell the Times that a unit of eight special operators, mostly Delta Force and Green Beret, were in Tripoli the night of the attack on a counterterrorism mission that involved capturing weapons and wanted terrorists from the streets and helping to train Libyan forces. When word of the Benghazi attack surfaced, two members of that military unit volunteered to be dispatched. They arrived just in time to engage in the final firefight between the terrorists and the Americans. I have a quote from one source. I don't know if it's an administration source. It's just a source. Says, quote, yes, we had special forces in Tripoli, and two members of the special forces, in fact, did volunteer and engaged heroically. And now they've been given a medal for their actions on the ground in Benghazi. The spider web just gets thicker and thicker and more confusing. I think it all has to do with hollow points and contrails and the NSA. Anyway, I think that something went wrong in Benghazi, and Barry's desperately trying to cover it up, and chances are he'll get away with it. In the meantime, we'll all talk about Obamacare and the website glitches, all of that. If I hear the word Obamacare one more time on Fox News, it's been an Obamacare marathon. Yeah, I think I'm just gonna jump off a bridge if I hear it one more time. I can't take it anymore. You know, my extremely attractive audio engineer commented that. For all of the news hours put into analyzing the socialist takeover of American healthcare, and for all the ranting and raving by so-called conservatives on Fox, at the end of the day, nothing will change. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's just all a bunch of sound and fury to no good end. And it's bad television. And it's bad radio. You can't hardly listen to talk radio. It's just an Obamacare marathon. Who could take that? Meanwhile, there are other important things going on. And while I don't think that Barack Obama and the New World Order are engaged in an active conspiracy to divert your attention away from the things that really matter, has that ambulance gotten Mr. Jones out of here? All right, yeah, have him check his blood pressure. Make sure he's going to be okay. Man, put some nitroglycerin under his tongue or something, man. I don't think there's an active conspiracy. I just think that people are generally distracted from the things that are really going on. And the leftists, both in the Republican and Democrat Party, they enjoy distracting us with a nonstop commentary on the website glitches involved in Obamacare and everything involved in Obamacare. But at the end of the day, things will change. Things will change. In fact, a few things changed on the ground just over this past week. According to the Jerusalem Post, Israel conducted air raids against a Syrian missile base this week, on Thursday, as a matter of fact. The strike targeted missiles and related equipment. Israel was concerned that they were being transferred over to Hezbollah. Yeah, that translates to the Army of Allah. We do homeschool here at the McBurney compound. And my 12-year-old, she's 12. My 12-year-old daughter, Nicole, is a gifted student. She's studying the history of the founding of the religion of Islam. And it's been quite interesting. Yeah, the Catholics really dropped the ball on that one. You read the history. It's kind of embarrassing. But let's go back to the news of the day here. Israel has repeatedly warned that it is prepared to use force to prevent advanced weapons, particularly from Iran, reaching Hezbollah. Israel reportedly carried out several airstrikes on Syria earlier this year, and the Barry Ho administration promptly... Iranian weapons, really. Sources say the target of Israeli airstrikes were SA-8 surface-to-air missiles that were being delivered to Hezbollah. SA-8, if I'm not mistaken, that's a Russian missile. Goes down into Syria, ends up over at Hezbollah. Anyway, I lost money in the pool. All my money on Israel will bomb Iran before Thanksgiving. Try to make some of my money back in the whose bomb will go off first pool. It's disturbing to me that things like this make the news. Israel apparently wanted to strike these missiles and didn't necessarily want to take credit for it. But the Ho administration went ahead and gave them credit in the news media. I wonder if this is why the Ho administration isn't really all that upset with Edward Snowden and the leaks and the leak of classified information he made. Because they spend an awful lot of time leaking classified information. That it would be better if they just kept to themselves. And I don't know if it's incompetence. I don't know if it's a grand conspiracy. I just know that it can end well with this Ho administration. All right. More from the war file. Now, this struck me as odd. On Monday, several newspapers in China, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different Chinese newspapers ran identical top headline reports about the awesomeness of the People's Liberation Army's Navy Strategic Submarine Force. Awesomeness? Is that a word? I mean, I know that's a word in Kung Fu Panda, but is that actually a word that the Chinese government uses to describe its military? Awesomeness!
I think that's American people translating.
Oh, it says something was lost in translation there? Awesomeness. All right. China, this is according to the Washington Times again, for the first time, claims that they possess effective underwater nuclear deterrence against the United States. The article featured 30 photos and graphics detailing, among other things, damage projections for Seattle and Los Angeles after being hit by Chinese nuclear warheads. Did you see this map over this past week? All the radiation flowing out. I'm looking at Denver going, oh, yeah. That's going to make for a lousy weekend if the Chinese decide. It's odd that they would run this in so many Chinese newspapers. It's just a little creepy and makes me a little nervous, that's all. According to the Times, all the state-run press reports stress the point that the PLA's missile submarines are now on routine strategic patrol, which, according to Chinese authorities, means that China, for the first time, has acquired the strategic deterrence and second strike capability against the United States. Unquote. And, you know, I think it might be true that they do have a strategic deterrence. Well, that's for sure. And second strike capability. There was a time in our defense posture when probably our greatest concern was to prevent any nation from achieving second strike capability. When the Soviets did, it led to the Cold War and but we don't have to worry. The Chinese are our friends. They're not going to do anything bad to us. They're our buddies, our business partners. Yeah, well, yeah, they have slaves, but still, they're good business partners. All right, so that's what's going on. We've got Israel striking Russian missiles in Syria. The Chinese bragging that they have deterrence and second strike capability, nuclear capability. Meanwhile, over at the Pentagon, Jessica Wright, acting Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness, has stated that the Defense Department must maintain its commitment to diversity and inclusion, which contribute to mission success. She asserted that diversity helps civilian and military employees perform well because they represent the nation in our workforce. The Defense Department not only talks about diversity in terms of race and gender and ethnicity, but it is much more than that in my mind, said Jessica. Your thought process, it's how you grew up and what you can add to the greater good because of your background. Yeah. Let's see. Jessica was speaking this Tuesday past on best practices for inclusion
and diversity. Yeah. The website for the event was titled Mission Critical, Transatlantic Security and Diversity. See, in years past, the event was just Mission Critical, Transatlantic Security. But now, in the modern age, under the Ho administration, it's Mission Critical, Transatlantic Security and Diversity. And the website declared, it is a security imperative for military leaders to proactively advance diversity and inclusion. That's D&I. We made that one up. D&I, do you get it? That's our nomenclature for diversity and inclusion. We want to promote the best practices of diversity and inclusion because of the rapid demographic change and advances in gender and LGBT equality and a new generation of veterans in NATO countries. Unquote. That was the website. I know. I didn't know websites could lisp either. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Now, we don't have any evidence that the artist formerly known as Prince actually throws in with a lisping crowd, right? No, but he did go a long way toward encouraging men to dress up like girls in the 80s.
He's very...
You think he's very heterosexual? Okay. Well, the eye makeup and the tight spandex, I don't think that helped the whole heterosexual culture. Well, yeah. I mean, all of hair metal pretty much. Anyway, there was a blurring of the lines that began to occur sometime around Culture Club's first album. Okay. When people were just allowed to come out and dress like a girl and sing like a girl. Anyway, all very disturbing.
But Prince always had a mustache.
Oh, yeah. Prince did keep the facial hair. All right. Well, we'll give him that. Anyway, it's all been a downward spiral since circa 1981. And, of course, if you ask my dad, it was circa 1968. If you ask his dad, it all started with Roosevelt. It's been downhill ever since.
I'd say after Washington.
Yeah, pretty much after George Washington, things have, they've been on a downward slide. All right. Now, back to the news. We go to the war file. Another story from the Washington Times. I do read other newspapers. By the way, the diversity and inclusion, the D&I story I did from the Queering of America file, that was from National Review. Thank you very much to the boys over at National Review. And if there are any girls there, I suppose I thank you too. All right. Now, we just reported on D&I, diversity and inclusion at the Pentagon and in the military. And now we're going to go back to the Pentagon, where a new manual has been printed out, a new training manual has been approved by the Pentagon. And here are some bullet points, important takeaways from the new report. The new training manual. Simply put, a healthy, white, heterosexual Christian male receives many unearned advantages of social privilege, whereas black, homosexual, atheist females in poor health receive many unearned disadvantages of social privilege. Unquote. That's a training manual. It's a statement from the manual created by the Defense Equal Opportunity Management Institute, the DEOMI. I know, we have people in the military being paid to write training manuals on black, homosexual, atheist females and how that's maybe disadvantageous to be so. They're all heroes. It doesn't matter. The clipped-haired, clenched-jawed lesbian who wrote this training manual, she's a hero. That's right. She's in the military. Must be a hero.
All right, get out of here with that. We go on with the story. There's a 20-page section in this new training manual that covers white privilege. I apologize. I don't mean to laugh. I only laugh because I am a, what did they call me here? Let's see. They called me a white, healthy, white, heterosexual Christian male. I got it all. I got it all going for me. That's right. That's what I need to be inflicted with a disability so that there be on an even playing field next time I compete for business against a, let's say, a black homosexual atheist female. That's right. Now, if I was in a wheelchair, I might feel like she had a chance. But as it is, she's never going to win against me. Never, ever. All right. Anyway, they got a white. The section of the training manual is called Power and Privilege. Whites are an empowered group. White males represent the haves as compared to the have-nots. I know. Well, what can you say about this? People in the military have to read these training manuals. You don't have a choice in the military. You might be a hero, but you don't have a choice as to what kind of propaganda they shove into your head. This is sad. The manual implores officers to, quote, assume racism is everywhere, every day. Understand and learn from the history of whiteness and racism. Any way we can get a few more S's in there? Racism is pretty good. It's fabulous. All right, that's it for the Pentagon this week. Oh, no, it's not, actually. We have one more from the war file. And this is a little more serious, ladies and gentlemen. A report by WorldNet Daily quotes Lieutenant General William G. Boykin. You remember Boykin? Not really. He was a Delta Force. He was with Delta Force. Those guys are tough. He was Deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence under W. Bush. And he says in a wide-ranging interview, he says, quote, over the past 3 years, it is unprecedented for the number of four-star generals to be relieved of duty and not necessarily relieved for cause. He says, I believe there is a purging of the military. That's from General Boykin. I didn't just make this up. I think they're purging healthy, white, heterosexual Christian males. And before long, the entire United States military will be run by black, homosexual, atheist females. And then all will be right with the world. All will be good. According to WND, Boykin specifically said that because of the civilian-military relationship, despite the fact that he thinks there's a purge, because of the unique civilian-military relationship in America, he does not see any prospect for a military coup. I know, didn't I just mention military coup last week? In a figurative sense, of course. Purely a rhetorical instrument there. But Boykin says, don't hang your hopes on a military coup because, he says, a coup would not be constitutional. This whole administration is unconstitutional. I think the government for my entire life since I was born has been unconstitutional. I don't know why the fact that a coup would be unconstitutional would lead General Boykin to think that it can't happen because almost everything that happens anymore is unconstitutional. According to Boykin, he's read reports that indicate that Obama has purged nearly 200 officers in the past 5 years. He says reports suggest these officers were suspected of disloyalty or disagreed with Obama on policy. A number of them, he says, have been relieved from duty for no given reason. Just get out. They just stamp on there, white, you're out. Heterosexual, you're out. Christian, you're out. Patriot, gone. Bring me some black lesbians. Make sure they're atheists. Give them the training manual, and let's prepare to lead America into her brave new world. All right. Oh, that was me. That wasn't Boykin, just in case you... I don't want any of that to get attributed to Mr. Boykin. All right. Now, speaking of defense secretaries, well, he was an undersecretary, but we'll give him that. Ex-defense secretary Robert Gates apparently has a new job. Yes, the Boy Scouts of America this week chose former Secretary of Defense and CIA Director Robert Gates as its next president. Yes, Robert Gates is going to head the Boy Scouts of America. Do we remember Bill Gates? Or not Bill Gates, I'm sorry. Robert Gates. Bill Gates, anyway, we'll leave that aside. Robert Gates was the Secretary of Defense under George W. Bush as the administration instituted the policies that would lose the war against Islamic radicalism. You remember that? Yeah, all those policies, rules of engagement that Bush put together that eventually lost us those two, Afghanistan, lost us Iraq. Yeah, you remember that? Well, Gates was a part of all that. And then when Obama was elected, lo and behold, Obama retained Robert Gates as the defense secretary. Jason, just to give you a little background on who Robert Gates is, in case you don't remember. Oh, by the way, Gates supported Barack Obama's withdrawal of the don't ask, don't tell, don't seek, don't smell, don't smile policy, allowing homosexuals to flagrantly flame and serve openly in the military, frolic around the barracks, throwing glitter dust on everything. I suppose it's appropriate now that the Boy Scouts have allowed homos into the tent that Robert Gates is uniquely qualified to lead, just as he did in the military. Before you know it, everything will be covered with glitter, and Robert Gates will be sitting atop a pile of homos covered with glitter, and he'll probably receive America's highest civilian honor, which will be the Fabulous Medal. It's just fabulous, lots of glitter and shiny colors. And it'll go with the curtains. All right. Let's see. Got a quote here from a former Eagle Scout and current homosexual, Zach Walls. He's the founder of an organization called Scouts for Equality. It's a significant and positive development to have Mr. Gates come aboard. He's respected by both sides of the debate on gay youth and parents in the Boy Scouts. It's fabulous. So there you go. Robert Gates is going to head the Boy Scouts. Somebody started a rival organization, apparently. But when letters went out asking parents to drop their Boy Scout membership and join the rival organization, many parents just said, "Whew, the Boy Scouts is over? Man, am I glad to be out of that. No, I'd rather not join the Scouts for America or whatever your group is. I'm sick of traveling 5 days a week, okay, to jamborees. You know, the knot tying, projects and the selling of candy. Please, let me out of it." So the Boy Scouts, it'll die on the vine, I think. All right, now, let's go to Ecuador. Did you know that Ecuador was named after the equator? Because the equator runs right through Ecuador? I learned that from my 12-year-old. Her homeschool lesson recently on geography. Rafael Correa. Do we know him? No, we don't. Well, he came to power in Ecuador in 2007. He's either the president or the prime minister or the king or the dictator, whatever. He's the boss in Ecuador since 2007. And according to Breitbart, he's one of several left-wing leaders that have taken power in Latin America in recent years, including the now deceased Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, Evo Morales in Bolivia, and even Sandinista Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua. So Rafael Correa has been installed as this new socialist leader down there. Well, not new, I guess, since 07. After his election, just a few years after his ascension to power, the Nicaraguan parliament, run by the Sandinistas, voted unanimously to ban abortion for any reason. That was Nicaragua. Daniel Ortega. Remember, he was the enemy, the communist dictator down there? And now the president there in Ecuador has repeatedly announced that he will resign his office if the Ecuadorian parliament makes abortion legal. He's against abortion. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, people ask him, they go, "Well, aren't you like a communist dictator, socialist?" "Hey, man, we might be thieves and communists. And you know, we might even be murderers when the political situation leaves us no choice. But, you know, killing babies? Come on, man. What do you think we are? Some kind of animals?" Unquote. That was Ecuadorian President Rafael Correa, or might have been his twin brother. But hey, even a communist thief who might kill a political enemy now and then, they don't stomp puppies, they don't strangle kittens, and they don't kill babies. Don't give up. want to thank my extremely attractive audio engineer. That's okay. Even though you sometimes make a mistake, you're still extremely attractive. I just want to thank her for that pick-me-up after realizing that the average school teacher in America is worse than a communist dictator in Nicaragua. It's kind of depressing. Yeah. So I appreciate that. And we won't give up. This is that's from the personhood file. I got another one from the personhood file. As the battle to reinstitute the legal recognition of the personhood of all innocent people continues, here in Colorado, and I believe up in North Dakota, we'll be having an impact on the elections this year as we put the question of just who deserves personhood and when before the voters, so that the ignorant masses can be given an opportunity to state in writing where they stand on the question. And it will be reviewed later by God. Whether we win the election or not, God will be going through the ballots, and there will be no hanging Chad excuses. All right, now, from the personhood file, in stark contrast to the communist dictators in Latin America who don't stomp puppies, they don't strangle kittens, and they don't kill babies, last week, according to Breitbart, here in America, pro-abortion groups launched an organized effort to feature women telling uplifting stories of their abortions. Yeah, they call it 1 in 3 week, the 1 in 3 week of action. And it will feature 100 events in the United States. And it's being sponsored by the Advocates for Youth, but not too young, if you know what I mean. Yeah, they're advocates for youth unless you're under 40 weeks gestation. That kind of youth, they don't go in for that. But they say that 1 in 3 women in the United States will at some point have an abortion. And I was reading the story, and I scrolled down and read some of the comments, and there were a number of pro-life people who took issue with this statistic that 1 in 3 women will at some point have an abortion. And I don't know if that's true or not. I know that there's been about 50 million abortions in the last 40 years and change. And so, I mean, you do the math. Women of childbearing age, and maybe some have had more than one abortion, and da-da-da. I don't know the exact statistic. But it's 50 million-plus dead innocent people murdered by their own parents and family members. So that in and of itself is pretty bad. But I believe that at least 1 in 3 people in America have been involved in an abortion. Whether they're the abortionist or the dad or the mom or the boyfriend or the cousin or the friend who says, yeah, go ahead, have an abortion. My guess is that 1 in 3 Americans have participated. So there. I don't have anything to back that up. But we'll go over the numbers after we get through Judgment Day, ladies and gentlemen. And we'll find out exactly who was right. But let's get back to the flaming, raging abortionists. At this 1 in 3 week of action, abortion advocates will be handing out a book called, the title of the book is 1 in 3, These Are Our Stories. Organizers suggest that their goal is to keep abortion safe, legal, and affordable. And Breitbart points out that this is a little different from the old Clinton, remember the Clinton axiom? They wanted abortion to be safe, legal, and rare. Well, these days they don't even go for the rare. They just want it safe, legal, and affordable. We want it to be a part of Obamacare. We want our abortions, and we want them cheap. The organizers also want to, quote, end the stigma surrounding abortion. So to do so, they are recruiting celebrities to participate. They quote a celebrity here, Katie Stack.
Who is that?
Any idea? I have no clue. Apparently, she's an MTV star.
Okay.
We're going to put quotation marks around the star. She was part of a show called 16 and Pregnant. Okay, so there you go. That's why we missed it. Yeah, she's joined the campaign, the 1 in 3 campaign. And she gave an interview to Think Progress, which is one of George Orwell's, oh, I'm sorry, George Soros's tentacles, Think Progress. In an interview, she said, the experience with MTV really it reinforced for me that, like, it can be really, like, powerful to provide these opportunities to, like, allow stories to be, like, heard.
And these are stories that are complex, and they don't, like, necessarily fit into a pro-choice or, like, pro-life narrative.
Unquote. That's Katie Stack, MTV star.
Ms. Stack, if you kill the baby, it's not a pro-life narrative, okay? So you say your stories don't necessarily fit into pro-choice or pro-life. Well, as soon as you killed your baby, it was not a pro-life narrative. Now, no matter how well you tell the story, okay? The University of Michigan is set to host an event called Abortion Speak Out. I think I sprained my throat right there. It was like the ghost of Alex Jones sprung up in my throat there. Anyway, the name of the event coming up at the University of Michigan is Abortion Speak Out. And Katie Stack, MTV star, is going to appear there, and she says it's like very hard to talk about abortion without all the like negativity, without calling people murderers. Without all the judgment. The Speak Out event is almost an experiment to see if that's possible. Hopefully it is. I know that the organizers have taken a lot of steps to, like, make it safe. Make it, like, a safe space. But it's really hard to authentically create a safe space to share these stories.
Well, it's the stories of murdering children, so inherently it's not safe. And if you're going to go around swaggering proudly about how you killed your baby, and by the way, she told Think Progress, the fact of the matter is, no matter what anybody wants to, like, debate about the abortion and its morality, I feel that I, like, made the right decision. And that's threatening to people. The fact that I would actually say that. Unquote. Well, it's not really threatening to me that you want to admit proudly that you murdered your baby and you want to strut around and saunter and talk about the uplifting moment after you had your child butchered. That's not really a threat to me, Katie. It is a threat, however, to the destiny of your eternal soul. And that's really... by the way, hell is not a safe space, Katie. Not safe at all. All right. So we move on now. Deeper into the personhood file, we go down to Texas. This is from Breitbart again. A federal appeals court this past week ruled that most of Texas's tough new abortion regulations can take effect immediately, a decision that means about a third of the state's clinics that perform abortions won't be able to do it starting as soon as, well, now, yesterday. In a 20-page rule, these are the abortion regulations that you can't butcher a child and rip its arms and legs off unless it's under 20 weeks old. Yeah, you remember those regulations? They call them restrictions in the story here from Breitbart, but they're really not restrictions. There are regulations on just exactly who you can murder, how, and when. And this is touted as a pro-life victory down in Texas by National Right to Life and other abortion regulators, members of the abortion industry, who've made handsome livings and have feathered quite comfortable retirement plans regulating the murder of innocent people for the past 30-some-odd years. Well, in a 20-page ruling down in Tejas, the appeals court panel acknowledged that the provisions may increase the cost of accessing abortion providers and decrease the number of physicians available to perform abortions. However, the panel states, the U.S. Supreme Court has held that having the incidental effect of making it more difficult or more expensive to procure an abortion cannot be enough to invalidate an abortion regulation that serves a valid purpose and a restriction that's not designed to strike at the right to abortion itself. So right here, in their 20-page meandering legalese ruling, the appeals court out in Louisiana, the Fifth Circuit, has ruled that these abortion regulations in Texas do not strike at the right to abortion itself. And that's our problem with the National Right to Life Committee and all you other abortion regulators.
That's what this is. The supporters admit that they're not striking at the right to kill children. And those of us who are against the regulation of the murder of innocent people and who are generally against murder in any case are simply tired. We're no longer going to stand for regulating murder and not striking at the heart of the monster, this supposed right to murder innocent children. We're not satisfied with regulating the killing of innocent people. We want to strike. And so if you would like to strike, please join the personhood movement in your state. Go on the website, go to Personhood USA. There's a chapter in your state. And we can work to strike at the heart of the culture that promotes and even pays for the murder of innocent people. Apparently, one more thing from Breitbart. 12 Texas abortion clinics will not be able to perform abortion procedures starting this week. And I would posit that Planned Parenthood probably doesn't mind that very much, because these are going to be the smaller clinics that really compete with Planned Parenthood. They've got the big certified ambulatory surgical centers, and they can kill babies efficiently and cleanly, so that really, unless you go into the room where the baby's being butchered and slaughtered, you'd have no idea what was going on, because the buildings are clean and sparkly and shiny new. All right. So we move on from abortion regulations. Let's go to Belgium. From one end to the other, folks. In Belgium, euthanasia is legal for people over the age of 18. This is according to the Washington Post. Well, the government there is considering extending euthanasia to children. Oh, and to adults with early dementia. So if you're too young to decide what you should do with your life, or if you're too old and confused to know what's going on, the state in Belgium wants you to know that they are willing to kill you, if that would help. We're here to help. We're with the government. We're here to help. Here, take the blue pill. Advocates for the law, this new attempted law, argue that euthanasia for children with the consent of their parents is necessary to give families an option in desperately painful situations. I'm racking my brain. I can't think of the desperately painful situation that would lead me to want to kill one of my own children. But then again, I'm kind of an outlier. I'm part of the lunatic fringe. I don't believe it should be legal for anyone to advocate the murder of anyone, and it certainly should not be legal for one to kill oneself. Anyway, euthanasia in Belgium is not new. It's been around since 2002. They legalized it. In 2003 in Belgium, there were 235 deaths attributed to euthanasia, and that's up to a little over 1,400 in 2012. So that's 2, 4, 6. I've never been good at math. That's like a 7-fold increase over the course of 9 or 10 years. Now, in the Netherlands, euthanasia is legal under specific certain circumstances and for children over the age of 12 with parental consent. Now, there's an understanding there in the Netherlands that infants, too, can be euthanized and that doctors will not be prosecuted if they act appropriately. You know, if you follow all the rules and you kill the baby just the right way that the state says. Well, let's say if you kill the baby just the way the National Right to Life Committee has outlined in many of their abortion regulations, then you'd have no problem over there in Belgium. Elsewhere in Europe, euthanasia is only legal in Luxembourg. Assisted suicide, that's where doctors help patients to die. That's an interesting turn of a phrase. Help a patient to die, formerly known as murder. Euthanasia is legal there in Luxembourg. Not Luxembourg. That's allowed in Switzerland. Well, what would you expect? The Scandinavians are gone to hell in a handbasket. In Belgium, the ruling Socialist Party has proposed this new bill expanding the right of euthanasia. Isn't it amazing that you can convince people that they have the right to destroy themselves, their families, and their entire societies, and then they commence to do it and they think they're free? And at the end of the day, everybody's dead. Unless you're wearing a burqa, I think. Or the beard, you know, the unkept beard with the towel on your head. Shouting Allahu Akbar. That's all that'll be left of Europe, but at least they will have gone down knowing that they were free. It is the Weekly Worldview. Turn those guitars down, boys. It's the Weekly Worldview. We're rounding third. We're headed for home, and no, you got to turn it off. I know, it's a guitar solo. She has a hard time sometimes separating the need for commentary on news and the guitar solos. All right, I'm going to lose this one. All right, we're back. It's the Weekly Worldview, ladies and gentlemen. Please, come on now. There's still some important news that we've got to do. What with the end of Europe and Belgium and Western civilization in general being orchestrated there by all the free liberals who are free and free. They're so free. We go now to the politics file here in America. Another story from Breitbart. Do I ever read other websites? It's weird. Anyway. This is about Nancy Pelosi. She hopes to regain the House speakership in 2014, and who wouldn't want to see her with that big oversized mallet? I mean, yeah, that'll be great. She says her first job as speaker would be to push universal child care as a part of Obamacare. Yes. She says she wants to pursue, quote, comprehensive, affordable, quality child care.
It's Alex Jones.
Is that Alex Jones? That wasn't my best Nancy Pelosi. I want her to sound like a used-up, angry, bitter old wench. Because that's the way she comes off to me. She wants comprehensive, affordable, quality child care. That would have the biggest impact on women, families, and job creation. It would unleash the power of women. Unquote. Says a very bad impersonation of Nancy Pelosi. I think the Alex Jones interview, it affected my pipes. They're not going to be the same for like a week. Anyway, Nancy, those of us who are normal and still have some grasp on sanity, we believe that the power of women is to shape the next generation through child rearing, not to drop them off at a government daycare so that mom can go to work and the children can be brainwashed by socialist child molesters. Okay? Not to put too fine a point on it, but just about anyone can be trained to go to work. I mean, most of us men, we do jobs that you could probably train a chimpanzee to do if you had to. But a godly woman holding together and building a family and a home and training children is far more valuable than any job or any work or any salary. You see, Nancy wants women to be free to go to work and contribute to the economy and realize their own self-actualization aside from the patriarchal hegemony of male society. But really what women want and what women need is a woman needs a good man. And not to be too sexist about it, because I think the first good man that a woman needs is Jesus Christ. He's the first good man a woman needs. And after that, a woman needs a good husband. Why? Because we husbands desperately need good women. We'd rather you don't go to work. We'd rather you stay home and help us hold civilization together by raising up and training our children in the fear and admonition of the Lord. That's what we want. And government-sponsored child care, Nancy, is going to do anything but unleash the power of women. It's going to enslave them in the chains of socialist freedom, quote, freedoms in quotes there. Anyway, I heard, speaking of Obamacare, and I won't say it again, but Nancy brought it up, so I'm going to address it here. I heard probably the best take on the Obamacare marathon on Fox News, CNN, ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, RT, Al Jazeera. That's all you hear. Obamacare, Obamacare, Obamacare. I heard the best take from some guy on Glenn Beck's show. It wasn't Glenn. It was someone who called in. I think it was someone that works for Beck at his Blaze Network. And he said that years down the road, will the Republican response to Obamacare be remembered as Republicans standing up and saying the government is instituting an immoral, enslaving, and ultimately murderous policy. So let's delay it until we get the enrollment mechanism running more efficiently. That website's really embarrassing. Can we sign up the slaves faster? Can we get them into the system so that we can kill their children and their old people more efficiently? It's just embarrassing. I mean, you can order a book on Amazon anytime. Is that how the Republicans will be remembered? For standing up against the technocratic minutiae of what is an ultimately murderous policy? Shall we not be remembered for standing up and saying, this is wrong, and we will not tolerate it, we will not stand for it, we will take it apart? Well, I'm afraid that the Republicans will probably be remembered as technocratic cowards, able to stand up and criticize a website for its embarrassing inefficiencies, but ultimately not wanting to dismantle this socialist, murderous policy. Ultimately, they just want to tinker with it and make the website work better and change a little bit around the edges so that their friends and families' nests get feathered rather than berries. All right. Now we move to the justice file, and this is serious. A Santa Clara County judge announced at a court hearing on Friday that Christopher Hubbert, 62 years old, might be moved into a single-family home in Lake Los Angeles at any given moment. Why should anybody care? Well, he spent nearly two decades in a mental hospital, and he has admitted to raping 38 women. And he's about to be released. We have an explanation here from Deputy District Attorney Vonda Tracy out there in Santa Clara County. I believe we reported on this story when the possibility of this maniac's release first came up. And at the time, I'm sure most of us heard the story and thought, well, that'll never happen. They'd never let a guy like that out. Well, here it is. She says Hubbert's release is the final phase in a multi-step treatment process that ends with a conditional release in the community where he will initially be under constant supervision. And by the way, his release was supported by his treating psychologists, plural. Multiple psychologists have said, okay, 38 rapes. We understand everybody has bad days, bad years. We all have things we did in our youth that we're ashamed of, right? He raped 38 women. That's the explanation from the Deputy District Attorney Vonda there in Santa Clara County. She says, quote, we all know that no one wants this guy living near them. So our goal is to put out as much information as possible so that the public knows how closely monitored he's going to be so they feel safer. They want to let this guy go, but they're going to put a GPS thing on him, and I think Vonda Tracy, if you really want me to feel safer, number one, you can lie to people all day with your legalistic gobbledygook, Vonda, and all of you bureaucrats in the California prison system and justice system. You can lie to us all day and long and make us feel better, make us feel safer. But if you actually want us to be safer, you got two choices, Vonda. Number one, either execute this bastard like should have happened. Or number two, Vonda, how about you move in with him? You want me to be sure that he's under constant supervision? Well, I want you in his house. Hubbert's release to a home somewhere in Lake Los Angeles will be decided, possibly, at his next court hearing on December 4th. So that's, I'll be home for Christmas, right? Yeah, well, the meaning of that has changed. That's for sure. All right, now we move on to the Just Another Day in America file from Philadelphia. Walk with me, ladies and gentlemen, into a grocery store in Philadelphia. It's about 5 o'clock in the evening. This is before the time change, so it's really still broad daylight. We walk into the grocery store. There's about a dozen other people in the store. They're looking at bread and cookies and eggs, milk, orange juice. Suddenly, a man chases another man down one of the aisles where the man being chased collapses. The one man stands over the other and begins firing several shots while the victim lies on the floor. It's an execution-style homicide in broad daylight at a grocery store at about 5 o'clock in Philadelphia. It's just another day in America, ladies and gentlemen, where the lawyers and the judges, who are just lawyers in robes, have conditioned us to tolerate a level of bloodshed and murder and inhumanity that is simply intolerable. And I wonder, what will it take for us to draw the line? Well, it won't be this, because this is just another day in Philadelphia. A story like this should shock the nation and cause the people to rise up and demand that the judges and the justice system be utterly remade and that they all be turned out, perhaps arrested, perhaps deported. At the very least, arrested and prosecuted for the perversion of justice that they have sold us as justice. All right. Now we go to the Good Religion file. Four Iranian Christians who are in jail for attending a house church have lost their judicial appeals. They've been sentenced to 3 years and 8 months in prison in Iran. Why? They were charged with spreading Christianity. That's the charge in Iran. Now, these are the Iranians who Barry Ho is about to sit down and negotiate with as they gin up a nuclear bomb so they can drop it on the Jews. Meanwhile, they're killing as many Christians and imprisoning and torturing and oppressing as many Christians as they can. And what does Barry want to do? He wants to sit down and negotiate with them. According to Religion Today, where I picked up this story, at least 300 Christians have been arrested in the past 3 years in Iran. Many were arrested while taking part in house churches. Their crime: preaching Christianity, praying, singing a hymn, opening, possessing a Bible. But don't be concerned, ladies and gentlemen. The Iranians are obviously people we can do business with. After all, according to Religion Today, Article 26 of the Iranian Constitution gives the right to religious minorities, including Christians, to form societies and meet together. So it's in their constitution that Christians are free to worship. Proving another one of my axioms, that a constitution is not worth the paper it's printed on when the men in office are corrupt. And that goes for Iran, and it goes the same for the United States of America. Whether it's under a Democrat, socialist, thieving, lying murderer, or a Republican, socialist, thieving, lying murderer, the Constitution, you might as well throw it out the window or roll it up and hang it next to the toilet. Because what really matters is what's in the hearts of the men who lead the nation. And the hearts of the men who lead the nations of the world today are dark. They're dark indeed. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, from the Hollywood file, Owen Wilson is expecting a baby. Who's that? Where have you been? He's an actor. He's a star. No, he's a movie star, apparently. His name is Owen Wilson. He's a 44-year-old actor, and he's expecting a child with his longtime friend, Carolyn. She has revealed that she and Owen have never been in a committed relationship, but they both wanted to have a child. So they decided to do it together. And she says they're not planning to start a relationship at all, even though she's 6 months pregnant. Their baby will be this actor's second child. What's his name? Owen Wilson. It'll be his second child after his ex-girlfriend gave birth to a son. His name was Robert. Back in 2011, the couple broke up 5 months later. Owen Wilson. Poster dad for America. These two, this guy, it's like him and his personal trainer decided, hey, let's just have a baby. And I'm a star, so I can do whatever I want. They should be arrested and forced to marry or adopt out the kid because they're abusers. You know, folks laughed at Dan Quayle for his criticism of Murphy Brown back in the 90s. I mean, I even did. Yeah, I laughed at Dan Quayle. But that was because he was a hypocrite. And you know, he was a lying Republican promoting values through his governance that he spoke against on the campaign trail. But there is some truth to what Dan Quayle said about irresponsible people being allowed to just have kids and openly mock the idea of the institution of marriage that holds the whole world together and stops us from devolving into constant civil war and strife. It's the family. It's a man and a woman raising children. and they laugh at it and mock it, and I think they should be arrested and quite possibly publicly caned. I said caned. And then forced to marry. All right, that's it, folks. That's the Weekly Worldview for this week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV, at Denver Bible Church, at American Right to Life and Personhood USA, and as always, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studio. Should the Lord tarry, I'll be back with you next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.